This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN Hour number 3. Matt Brown, appreciate it. 2 hours down, one to go as we look up and see a touchdown for the Chicago Bears. And I think that Bajent is still in. It is. Bajent connects with Maurice Alexander for a 25-yard touchdown. Alexander, one catch for 25 yards and a touchdown. He is targeted 3 times here so far in this one. Over on the Brown side of things, it is still Deshaun Watson. He's 10 of 11 for 117. That said, that lead down to just 3 points is at 10 to 7 in favor of the Browns. This did go off as Browns 2.5-point favorites, so we are right on that thing here. And 39.5 is where we kicked this one to. Not able to see what's going on there in for the Vikings. I do get on the Twitter machine here, McCarthy hits Felton right between the 1 and the 3 for what would have been a first down, but the ball falls to the turf incomplete. So it doesn't look like they're helping J.J. McCarthy much over there is this Viking squad. But again, you're not really going to have to worry about that when you're throwing to guys like Jefferson and Addison and all of that. So I'm not really worried about it whenever a guy like Felton drops one for the Vikings. That's not going to happen to him. Juwan Jennings, by the way, also there in Minnesota. It's pretty good receiving core for Kyler Murray. I expect Kyler Murray to have a pretty good go at it up there. I'm dancing through the raindrops here with this Tigers bet. Melton is putting runners on left and right. I just get a non-conventional double play as they get the runner at first and the guy from third gets caught up between home and third and they end up getting him. They're still two on here in the top of the third inning, but boy, you can only get so lucky here. This Tigers team just absolutely flirting with disaster as the White Sox continue to put runners on the bags, but not able to convert those into runs. We'll keep you updated there on that one. But boy, I'm lucky so far. I understand that I'm lucky at least, and we'll see if that can turn into a win for me here as I have them as minus 132. It had gotten all the way out to 45-50 out there, so there were some people in the same thinking as me, but so far so good, I guess, whenever you consider how this could have gone. It could have been absolutely horrific as Melton is just getting kind of pummeled here through 3 innings. So I want to take a shift gears here. And over on MGM, so it's very nice. You go in, you go to the futures, click the little futures tab over there at MGM. It comes up a chart. You scroll down a little bit, and it is exact finishing positions in the various divisions. And so outside of just betting who's going to win a division or the exact, you know, we've seen exactas, and we've even seen exact orders when it comes 1 through 4. But what if you just want to bet the Browns to be last? Well, you can do that over there. And I look at this number and I understand it is locking up your money for a long time. But the Browns at minus 200 to finish last in this division is such an incredible bet. If you have the bankroll to do this, they are worse than the Ravens. They are worse than the Bengals and they are worse than the Steelers. They are worse than the Ravens, even if they lose Lamar Jackson. They're worse than the Bengals, even if they lose Joe Burrow. And I don't know exactly what's left in the tank there for Aaron Rodgers, but we've seen the kind of the quarterback play there in Pittsburgh from the backups look pretty good. And I think that probably they could hold their own even if they lost Aaron Rodgers. And the incentive that I continue to talk about, and I understand the players are going to play hard, the incentive for this Browns team to take one this year, just take it on the chin, get to the top of the draft, reset your organization with your quarterback of the future. It is impossible for all of these draft analysts to be wrong about this draft. Now, who exactly ends up being the top 3 quarterbacks taken, that is to be determined. But for them to be wrong about 10 different guys that could possibly play their way into a first-round grade and play their way out of a first-round grade and the things like that. Like, you got to understand, if you can get to the top of the draft and you have your choice of your favorite of the 3, and again, there's like 10 guys, if you look at these mock drafts, that are kind of in and out of these mock drafts in the first round. 10 different quarterbacks. This is the way that you leave the Deshaun Watson stain behind. You tip your cap to Shedeur Sanders. Thanks for being here. If you want to stay as a backup, great, whatever. But this is how you reset the organization. This is how you get the fan base excited again. And so I think there's a lot going on here for this Browns team to finish last. And again, I understand it's not for every bankroll. Minus 200 is not for every bankroll, and certainly for locking it up as long as you do. It would be shocking to me, absolutely shocking, if this Browns team is not last in this division. Now, as far as the winner of the division, you've probably seen all of these odds. Minus 115 on the Ravens, plus 185 on the Bengals, plus 550 there on the Steelers, and then we get to 20-1 there on the Browns. So that those numbers you've already seen. But what about second? Are you really, really in on Cincinnati? Do you love the Ravens, but you're also in on Cincinnati? You can get like a plus 165 for them to be second. If you hate the Browns like I do, and you think the Browns are going to be last, so you remove them from the equation. So now it's a head-to-head. If you love the Ravens, it's a head-to-head between Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. Is there a world that exists where I guess Pittsburgh is closer to Cincinnati than I think? Maybe so. But there is no doubt that the offense is better in Cincinnati, and if the defense can even just play league average, then the team is exponentially better than the Steelers are. But the reason these numbers are where they are is this is not expected to be a league average defense. Now, every single year, an offensive unit disappoints, a defensive unit surprises us, et cetera, et cetera. Could that be Cincinnati this year? If that's the case, then the upside actually could be winning this division. But if you're only getting league average defensive play and you've fallen in love with the Ravens, then it's interesting for Cincinnati there. As much as I like minus 200 on the Browns to finish last, I also really like the Steelers at plus 150 to finish third, because I do believe that it's going to be one of Cincinnati or Baltimore, and I have a firm position on the Browns being last, which obviously that just slots Pittsburgh in at third. That's a plus 150 bet over there on BetMGM. Just an interesting little market to look at there in this one, and it's we'll talk about the AFC South here in just a second, but I do want to remind you guys that we do have the football intro season offer that is going on over there at VSiN.com right now. You head to VSiN.com/subscribe. It's just $9.99 for your first month. And when you get in there, you're going to end up wanting to stay anyway. You're going to want to go in. You're going to want to take advantage of all the stuff that we have going on. We're doing prop projections over there now. We have some AI tools that are working for you that are going in and trying to break down all of this stuff and make the handicapping process easier for you. We have the daily articles that are posted every day by our experts and all the different sports. That's the other thing about this. I mean, you can't handicap every single sport. We have golf. We have tennis. We have this stuff that is very hard to keep up with. You also get the betting guides that we have out right now. That includes the college guide. We got the NFL guide. We'll be updating the NFL guide here in a couple of weeks once we get done with training camp and we get all these depth charts and all the injuries worked out and everything like that. So VSiN.com/subscribe right now, as low as $9.99 to take advantage of that. You guys have been quad boxing us over there on YouTube TV. Appreciate it. You've been seeing some interesting play here. I understand it's against backups, but Deshaun Watson, at least against backups, has not looked completely washed. So there is at least that. This Bears team is a blatant drop right there as these second teamers just get hit like in the numbers. You start to realize how sometimes it's not the talent level. All these dudes in the NFL are awesome, right? I mean, you're funneling in from hundreds, and I say hundreds because you still have to count in, like, you know, you still have to count in players that are in the UFL. You have to count in the programs that are in, you know, Division II and all of this, whatever, like, you know, hundreds of programs. If you make it to the NFL, you're amazing. But see, when the moment is like a little too big, you're trying to make the team, you're trying to impress, you're trying to do whatever, you're trying to do a little bit too much, and then you have a ball just like doink directly off the middle of your chest, and you realize that probably could just be the end of your tenure with the teams and stuff. It's got to be so, so, so brutal. But 10-7 right now, Browns over the Bears. Bears just had a bad, bad drop there that would have been a first down. It's 3rd and 5 as we are about 5.5 minutes away from halftime. We're going to get pass interference. So this drive is going to extend as the Browns defender interferes the receiver there for the Bears. So 2.5-point spread. So this is kind of big. If the Bears could get within field goal range, we'll see what they can do there. Over in the AFC South, Texans, Jags, Colts, and Titans. And before we get into this one, our very own Jonathan Von Tobel, a very outspoken Colts fan, had some thoughts on his Colts.
I lean toward the under because as we focus so much on the offense as we usually do, I think the other question becomes like, what is this defense? You know, part of the changes for this team in terms of personnel, a lot of it happened on the defensive end. Nick Cross, who played over 1,100 snaps from last year, is gone. Quiddy Pay, 721 snaps, 38 pressures, is gone. He's actually here in Las Vegas. Samson Ebicum, who played 416 snaps at 23 pressures, he's gone. Even Neville Gallimore, who's with the Chicago now, I believe, 467 snaps played along the defensive interior. He's gone. So you're really trying to recreate some of this. Is Lyle Tulatu going to take a next step as an edge rusher? He had 8.5 sacks. He led the team with 61 pressures, but he's not a dominant force there. And what if Charvarius Ward is not as good at the corner spot? What if he has those issues again? What if C.J. Allen, there's a lot of questions about him as a sideline to sideline, especially in coverage type guy. What if that doesn't work at the middle linebacker position as a rookie? I think you really start to then poke holes in what this team is defensively, and they're a pretty average group.
So you can tell JBT down on his Colts. Well, guess what? For them to finish third is plus 210. For them to finish fourth is plus 240. He could just bet them both and walk away. Just bet them both and walk away. If you think that they're going to be that bad and you think that they're that far behind the Texans and the Jags, well, bet them both. Bet them finish third. Bet them finish fourth. As long as they finish in one of those two positions, you make money, walk away. Feel good about yourself. So plus 210 for this Colts team to finish third, plus 240 for, plus 260, I should say, for them to finish fourth in the division, dead last, even behind the Titans, which Titans are interesting. Could Cam Ward possibly make some sort of leeway there with this team? I think that is something that we got to figure out with all of that. When we come back, we'll give you the update, all kinds of stuff going on in all these football games, Major League Baseball as well, a couple more games to look forward to.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dancing through the raindrops no more as they get two more on Troy Melton, who is just not hitting spots. I mean, you look at these, like this pitch chart that's going on right now, it's like, yeah, I understand you're throwing 97, but it's just right down the middle. These guys are professional hitters. They're great. White Sox already have seven hits in this one through the end of the third inning. So we will see 3-1 right now in favor of the White Sox over the Tigers. And Melton does not start to find some corners. Yeah, I imagine he's going to have a short day. He's already at 69 pitches anyway, so it's not going to be that much longer for him. We do have a game that's going to be going in about 5 minutes. The Cardinals and the Cubs, like we said, that is just a massive, massive, massive favorite in the Cubs. And so minus 180 is about the best number you're going to find, something like that, in favor of the Cubs. McGreevy's been terrible for this Cardinals team, so that's why we are where we are there with that one. Over on the football side of things, it's still 10-7 in favor of the Browns over the Bears. Deshaun Watson has played the entire first half for the Browns. He's 11 of 13 for 126 yards. He's been sacked one time. He does not have a touchdown, nor does he have an interception. We've also gotten Tyson Bagent the entire time for the Bears so far. 8 of 14, 112. He does have a touchdown. He has been sacked one time over there in that one. We did get a touchdown pass from Jackson Dart before he left. 3 of 4, 26, the touchdown. But the highlight you're going to see in this one is him just getting absolutely lit up. Free runner just pelted him. He went over the sideline, was talking with the trainers. Next thing you know, he's over there in the blue tent. They put out that he was being looked at for concussion. So we'll see how that all plays out. 4 of 4 for 64 yards for Jameis Winston, who took over. Cam Scadabo, by the way, 4 for 19. So he's getting some carries here in this one. Devin Singletary also getting reps for the Giants. And guess who has a catch for 7 yards? Odell Beckham Jr. back in the New York Football Giants uniform. He has one catch for 7 yards. So Odell Beckham back in there for the New York Football Giants. Over on the Viking side of things, Kyler Murray did not play very long. 2 of 3 for 10 yards for him, and then he was done. J.J. McCarthy's now been in there. 4 of 7, 34 yards for them. They've not found the end zone yet, but do have a field goal. And on the Buffalo Carolina side, you get the start out of Josh Allen. He looks awesome. 6 of 8, 111, touchdown, showing off his new toy as well. DJ Moore has 3 for 61 on 4 targets, including a long of 32. The touchdown actually ends up going to Keon Coleman there in that one. But again, they were going to show off to the new people in that new stadium, and they did so. And that then they go to Kyle Allen, who, by the way, has just gone 10 of 11 for this team for 76 yards. So you are getting that out of this Buffalo squad. Bryce Young started 3 of 5 for 18 yards. Is given away to Kenny Pickett, who was 3 of 3 for 28 and a touchdown over there. Trevor Etienne getting a catch, 1 for 11 yards. We also have Jonathan Brooks, like we said, getting some reps over there as the starting running back. That being said, only 3 for 5 yards for Jonathan Brooks. So he's trying to steal some of those Chuba Hubbard touches while Chuba Hubbard is on the sideline. We'll see if he can see if what he can do there. This is going to be, we got the sounder a little bit earlier. The Browns are probably just going to make the switch at halftime. They wanted to get a 2-minute style offense in for Deshaun Watson, and we just happened to be at the 147 mark here in this one. So they got exactly what they were trying for. So they get the kind of the 2-minute deal with Deshaun Watson. We'll likely see Shedeur Sanders here in the second half against the Bears, which, by the way, Bears didn't play any starters in this one, if you're wondering. So this is good numbers. Don't get me wrong, but again, against the backups out there. Back to Major League Baseball, and if you guys listen to our morning show here on the network, you know Jensen Lewis, former major leaguer, always has some good opinions when it comes to Major League Baseball, and he kind of chimed in here on the MVP race over in the NL.
So I know a lot of people are like, all right, WAR is just not the end-all be-all, but it is a great tool to decipher where we are by splitting up both batting and pitching. Okay, Peaker Armstrong right now, an 8 flat wins above replacement. Shohei Ohtani combined between batting WAR and pitching WAR is 6.6, so nearly a win and a half more valuable is Peaker Armstrong at the moment. Generational defender, Peaker Armstrong, and I repeat for people, when you look at an MVP, are you able to justify half a season of pitching when you don't finish the season? This is going to be the really captivating part of the award voters. And where do they value half a season of pitching? Again, all predicated on Shohei not pitching again. Maybe he does. Even if he got a couple of starts at the end of September, is that enough?
So if he gets a couple of starts at the end of September, we might have a little bit of an answer there to that one. Shohei did throw a bullpen. So back on the mound, not saying that he will be back. This could just be ramping up and looking down the line to us getting to the postseason. Edwin Diaz, by the way, stumbling a lot in the closer role there for the Dodgers. So who knows? Maybe that's the way they end up deploying Shohei when it's all said and done, whenever we get to the playoffs or whatever. But he is back throwing bullpens. If we go over here, and the one thing you can always count on when it comes to FanDuel is they leave up their awards markets even when the games are played. So tip of the cap there to them. -110 on both sides here for Shohei and Pete Crow Armstrong. I do understand that Shohei did pitch in a 6-man rotation for the Dodgers, but if he's not Shohei that is doing it on a regular basis, then you have to just look at Shohei the hitter. And as Jensen just said, PCA's just been better. PCA has just been better this year at the plate. Oh, and by the way, toss in the 30 stolen bases as well that you're getting from PCA. So I do understand Shohei does something that nobody else does. But if he's not doing both things, then we just have to take and compare apples to apples. Two guys in the batter's box, right? And you can throw in all of the intangibles and things like that and whatever, but at the end of the day, you just kind of have to say, okay, what are these guys doing in the box? And PCA's had a better season. However, if Shohei comes back and if Shohei makes some sort of difference, here in the next few weeks on the pitching side of things, that does then tilt it again. Because you are, eventually we'll just have to make it where Shohei can't win anything or something. Like, we're just going to like give him his own award and then something else that we can give all these other guys. But when you pitch at the level that he pitches at, and then you still do what he does in the plate, yes, he is your MVP. Unfortunately, like every year, no matter what. So long as he does what he does on the hill, and he doesn't just drastically fall off at the plate, which I understand he struggled early on. And if you haven't looked lately, I could understand where you're saying like, wait. But Shohei hasn't been doing all of that at the plate. Well, here's the deal. He actually has of late. He really dug himself out from where he was at the beginning of the season. And now you look up and he's got 27 homers and he's got 77 runs scored and he's got 77 RBI. And oh, his OBP is 390 now. So he is doing it at the plate. Now, not quite as good as PCA, but it's really, really close. And then obviously it would flip if he's able to get back on the bump and do what he was doing at the beginning of the year. So that's unfortunate. I know a lot of people have some really juicy PCA tickets. I'm kind of rooting for PCA here. I'm kind of hoping that the Dodgers are just doing this to get Shohei ready for the postseason as opposed to him coming back in the regular season. But who knows? Maybe they kind of want to get on a run of their own. Remember, their most recent run was a skid. It wasn't actually a winning streak. So maybe there's something they are trying to do there with that one. But for me, when I kind of look at all this, if I were a voter today, I would bet Pete Crow Armstrong. But we still have, like I said, there's still 40-ish games for these teams. And if Shohei comes back and makes three more starts and or whatever, comes back in the closer role, whatever it is, like makes an actual difference on the hill, then it's his award, unfortunately, for the people who have all those PCA tickets. Because in any other world that exists, he is your runaway MVP. There's a reason right now there's only two guys listed on FanDuel. Literally two guys. You can bet either Shohei or you can bet PCA. That's it. There's two guys listed because it's going to be one of the two. Over on the AL side, Yordan Alvarez just absolutely running away with it. Minus 2,000 over there. I honestly think he could get hurt and miss the rest of the season and still win. The numbers are so good that I don't think there's anyone that can catch him. But, you know, don't wish injury on anyone, and certainly don't wish injury on Yordan Alvarez because we've got that Astros ticket for that division. Guys, Veasan, on the clock, we're doing this the Pro Football Futures Draft here again. Our boy the Swede, Dustin Swedelson, is going to host this puppy. So win totals, division winners, player props, all the different things like that. You can see who's a part of it there on your screen. You won't see my picture. I didn't get invited. I think they were scared. It's basically what it comes down to. That has to be why I would not get invited to something in which I would just completely dominate. But I understand. Let's clear it out for everybody else here in this one. It's Thursday, August 20th, 5 Eastern. Again, Dustin's going to host that thing. It's going to be incredibly fun. So be sure and check it out.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We go to half 10-10, Browns and the Bears. I assume this will be it for Deshaun Watson. We heard a little bit earlier that it was probably going to be a half, 11 of 15, 126. Again, this is against the backups over on the Chicago side. Tyson Bagent, 13 of 22. They let him sling it. 169, a touchdown and a pick. Caden Davis, 4 for 88. So a favorite target there of Tyson Bagent. But again, that's all the backups there over on the Bears. Tied 10-10 there. In that one, the Browns went off 2.5-point favorites, 39.5 the total in that one. We are at the half between the Vikings and the Giants, 10-3 in favor of the Giants. Jameis Winston in for Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart does throw a touchdown. Both Murray and McCarthy have played over there in that one. And the Bills and the Panthers are at half, 13-7 in favor of the Bills. Josh Allen goes marches right down the field, 111 passing yards and a touchdown. Kyle Allen comes in, hasn't got to the end zone yet, but 14 of 16 for 108. We've seen both Bryce Young and Kenny Pickett in this one as well. Now joining us here on the guest line, Eddie Law. You can find him at Cage Side Press at elaw32 over on the Twitter machine. Appreciate the time, my man.
Thanks for having me. I always love doing this stuff, dude. Talking to somebody else that talks about sports. I just heard you talk about Kyler Murray, my old quarterback. Now I'm Minnesota, all right? I wish you the best, but at the same time, I don't, buddy.
Are you, I assume then that you're in Arizona. You're in Phoenix.
No, currently in Philadelphia for UFC 330, but I am based in Phoenix.
Based in Phoenix. So yes, it might be a long season for you Cardinals down there, but I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I do believe there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but this one might be rocky.
Man, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Dude. I've been in Phoenix since I was a little kid, dude. I got season tickets for the last 10 years, dude. I need one Phoenix or Arizona. One, just one.
Yes. Please. Just get something done there in that one. Okay. So let's head to UFC 330 over there. Like you said, in Philadelphia, Xfinity Mobile Arena over there. We got a couple of title fights, but let's start here with the main event. And Ian Machado, Gary going up against Islam Makhachev. This is big, big, big line here in favor of Makhachev. Obviously, the dude has just looked so incredibly dominant. He just goes in, smothers you, gets you to the ground, does basically whatever he wants to. You get Machado, Gary, who is the taller fighter, bigger reach and stuff like that. So it seems like we kind of know what both of these dudes want to do when they get in there. You think Gary wants to keep it standing, try to keep distance and all of that. Obviously, Makhachev wants to get to the ground. Is that what you assume we see as soon as the cage door closes?
See, here's the thing about that. Everybody talks about Islam Makhachev's wrestling. Why? Comes from the Khabib Nurmagomedov camp. His father, Abolmanov Nurmagomedov, has brought up just the most, I mean, I call him psychotic almost, type of grapplers on the planet. These guys not only do not know how to stop going for it, they always get it. And when they get it, they go for it again. But do not sleep on Islam Makhachev's striking. He comes from that AKA San Jose gym with guys like Cain Velasquez, you know, Daniel Cormier, former Olympic wrestler who had pretty nice hands, right, as a double champ. Mm-hmm. So do not sleep on the striking. Islam Makhachev is not afraid to strike with Ian Gary. But the best way for him to win, the most direct way to victory for Islam Makhachev, and he knows it, and so does Ian, is the wrestling, absolutely. Ian's going to try to keep it on the feet. He'll try to show off the takedown defense a little bit here and there. But how many times can you stop Islam before he gets you down? That's the question.
Yeah, Eddie, and that's kind of where I was going with this. I'm glad you set that up. You get Gary, and if you just look at the stats, right, about 80% takedown defense, but it's a different animal that he's going up against tonight.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, if you watch that Shavkat Rakhmonov fight that Ian Gary was in, he stuffed takedowns beautifully. And you know, all credit to Shavkat, great grappler. He can get takedowns any day he wants. But this is Islam Makhachev, right? This guy's in the room, in the wrestling room, with guys like Khabib, guys like Usman Nurmagomedov, Umar Nurmagomedov. All these guys are high-level, high-class, I mean, probably the best grapplers on the planet. It's really hard for me to compare Shavkat Rakhmonov, you know, wrestling to Makhachev. So it's going to be, it's a different world.
So when we look at just the betting odds here, I mean, it's out to -360 now, you know, in favor of Islam, +285 there on Gary. That's, you know, if you think that Islam's going to win, it's not for everybody's bankroll or something like that. Is there a different way? I mean, do you think this goes, do you think this makes it to the final bell? Do you think this goes the distance? Do you think that Makhachev gets the submission or whatever? How does this fight end basically in your eyes?
In my mind, a lot of people have called it a finish for Islam. Mm-hmm. I don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. If Islam Makhachev wins, he can win any way he wants to. But I just believe, I have a belief in Ian Machado Gary, that he's going to be able to extend those rounds, right? Use his mobility, you know, stay away from Islam quite a bit. When Ian fights a wrestler, it's not the most entertaining thing. It really isn't. He wants to stay away. He wants to keep his legs away and everything, use his reach and all that. So is there a world where it could get to the decision? Absolutely. And I feel like it's going to go that way. I just want to see the what if, the big what if for me is, what does Ian have in store when Islam starts diving for legs? Is that knee going to come up? Are we looking for an uppercut? You know, I mean, there's so many ways to try and defend it and take advantage of that level of Islam. But no, that's it's going to be wild. I'm excited for it, honestly.
Talking to Eddie Law, Cage Side Press at Elaw 32 over on the Twitter machine. We get Mackenzie Dern, Jillian Robertson here. This is about 2-1 in favor of Dern. You're getting about +165 if you want to go the Robertson side of things here. 3.5 is the total rounds in that one. If you look, I mean, we kind of know what Mackenzie Dern is all about. And it's like, I guess I want you to point me in a direction for a Jillian Robertson win, because it seems like even though Dern's hands aren't very good, Robertson's hands are worse. And it's like, if you get into a grappling match, it leans towards Dern as well. What is the path to victory here for Robertson?
for Robertson, man, it's going to be a tough fight for her. If you look at her last opponents coming into this title shot, they have a record something of like an 0-19 record, her opponents, okay? It's not good. It's not good in terms of hers. Mackenzie Dern's, 3-3, something like that in the UFC? I can't remember off the top of my head. But, I mean, obviously, the ground games where everyone was talking about, for Jillian, to me, is can she catch Mackenzie in something she didn't expect? Or can she keep it standing, right? Maybe she's been working in the lab with, you know, Coach Dean Thomas and everybody else down in Florida working on her hands. If she keeps it standing, she has a really good chance against Mackenzie, because Mackenzie will overreach. She will do a little too much on the feet and put herself in some really rough spots. To me, on the feet, is Jillian's path to victory, but it's going to be a tough one.
We get one that isn't lopsided here in Turner and Fernandez. This is 110 on both sides, so a coin flip according to the books. How do you see it?
Violence, violence, violence. Dude, Jalen Turner's moved over to that gym in California. I don't know if anyone really has thought about it. If you remember, he retired, and we know retirements in MMA. Right. They're not permanent. They're not really real. What's it's the way
third,
for someone has to come
your
back?
Your third retirement is when it's real. Yeah, the first two, not so much. Yeah, the third one's real.
Yeah. Like, guys, you're not Michael Jordan. You can't keep coming back. Stop, or Brett Favre. Stop it, okay? But with Jalen Turner, he made the move to Costa Mesa, California. I think it's Orange County around there, to Bloodline, the gym Bloodline with Cub Swanson, guys like Richie Miranda, who just got to the UFC, guys like Chapulín, you know, they touch in here once in a while. Rafa Garcia is there. Chris McCarty is there. All kinds of just, like, high-level fighters. And so Jalen Turner is going to show us, I believe, a much higher level of mixed martial arts tonight. But don't sleep on Fernandez, dude. That guy can crack like anybody else.
So Edson Barbosa, anybody that's been around the game for a while obviously knows the name Edson Barbosa. He's going to enter tonight as nearly a 5-1. I mean, plus 500 as he enters the cage tonight. Is it worth maybe taking a sprinkle on a guy that we know at one point was super, super, super dangerous?
I believe so. I think it's worth it, right? I mean, if you have $5, man, throw it at it. You spend more than $5 on a coffee or even the worst beer over at the Link, right? So it's. I think it's worth it. Edson Barbosa has a history of pulling something out of nowhere and finishing dudes, right? He's coming in against a younger guy in Esteban Ribovic, who is a high-level striker and everything. But Edson Barbosa has been doing it forever. The reason for that line to be that way is that there's been whispers about a possible retirement from Barbosa tonight after the fight. And when that comes, I mean, when guys come out and say, hey, this is my retirement fight, 9 times out of 10, it does not go well. We just saw one about a week ago with Darren Elkins at the Apex in Las Vegas. Did not go well. He lost in under like 20 seconds. It was pretty bad. So that's, in my opinion, the reason for that line. But the thing about Barbosa, his language is violent and it's beautiful. And when you get a guy like Esteban across from him, just do not look away from the television, please. This is not the go get a beer or go get a cheesesteak or go get anything time. This is a sit on your butt and watch just magic happen in front of you.
He is Eddie Law, Cage Side Press at elaw32 over on the Twitter machine. Hey, appreciate the time and enjoy the fights tonight.
Thank you. And you guys have a good one.
Guys, if you head over to VSiN.com, if you are part of the VSiN Pro, you can get our college football guide, which is out right now. I continue to say this. I think it is the most valuable thing that we do over there, specifically now with the way that college football works, right? Everybody's going and playing in different programs. We don't know where guys are even coaching. Teams are switching conferences, all the different things. There's 138 teams, by the way, in the FBS. I bet you didn't know that if you hadn't already gotten the guide. Yeah, 138 of them. We got the best bets in there. Of course, we talked to Heisman. We got all the guys that all the teams that we think are going to win their respective conferences and also eventually make it to the playoff and, of course, win the entire thing. So all of that inside of this guide, it is awesome. You just got to put away some time to go in and ingest this thing. It is VSiN.com/subscribe, and you can get going for as little as $9.99 over there. Got the projection system stuff now. We got the NFL guide. The NFL guide's going to be getting updated here pretty soon. All the reasons to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. When we come back, we're going to put a bow here on this solo edition of Ready, Set, Bet. Recap any bets that we've got in the account and, of course, update you on that live scoreboard. Don't go in here. Ready, Set, Bet. Coming back, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. If you are a Cardinals fan, Got to love what you just saw here in the first inning as you walk up, you call up the number 59 prospect in all of Major League Baseball, Joshua Baez, who's absolutely just crushing AAA. And he comes up, and the first pitch he sees in Major League Baseball is a 449-foot home run after a couple of walks by Matthew Boyd. 3-0 in the top of the first inning for the St. Louis Cardinals. Baez, everyone's wondering when he was going to be up. It wasn't an if, it was a when. They call him up, and first pitch he sees, 449 feet, a 108.6 exit velo for him. So great first swing there in the show for Joshua Baez. 3-0 Cardinals over the Cubs. We're just in the second inning there in that one. I feel incredibly lucky as we somehow are tied in this Tigers and White Sox game. Just unbelievable. Melton was not good and yet somehow was able to escape. And I will say it was definitely an escape. 4 1/3 innings for him, 9 hits given up and just 3 earned runs against him. Despite the fact that there was people on the base pass all over the place, a liner right there just actually gets the runner doubled off at second. So we're going to go to the end of the fifth inning. We're going to head to the top of the sixth, 3-3 Tigers and the White Sox. K, 5 innings, 6 hits against, 4 strikeouts, 3 earned against him there in that one. Over in football, Buffalo Bills 13-7. We're into the third quarter now. Kyle Allen is in at quarterback for Josh Allen. Josh Allen goes in, touchdown drive, 111 yards, 6 of 8 for him. He hits DJ Moore 3 different times. That said, DJ Moore was seen on the, I'm looking at the Twitter machine, he was seen on the sideline talking to one of the trainers, so you certainly don't want to see that here in the preseason. 2 for 41 for Khalil Shakir. We also get the touchdown pass that went to Keon Coleman. He ended up getting 2 more catches in there. He's 3 for 17 and a touchdown. Over on the Panther side of things, 3 of 5 for Bryce Young, so he didn't play very much. Now we're to Kenny Pickett, who is 9 of 9 for 61 and a touchdown. Quarterback controversy time, obviously. We're going to go Kenny Pickett over over Bryce Young. We get the Jonathan Brooks 1 for 9 in the receiving, so at least he did provide something out of the backfield there from a receiving standpoint, not so much from a rushing standpoint, as he had 3 carries for 5 yards. And then as we head to the New York Football Giants, Jackson Dart did start. Remember, Harbaugh would not tell us what he was going to do with all of this. He ends up starting Jackson Dart. He goes 3 of 4 for 26 yards and a touchdown. By the way, if you go look at the touchdown pass, it was pretty good. Like, he was rolling against his body, but he did get his hips squared up and was able to hit the receiver in the end zone. We also have a catch in this one from Odell Beckham Jr. Did you remember that Odell Beckham Jr. signed with the Giants? He is back. Made a catch there in that one. Also, Isaiah Likely has moved over to the Giants. He has 2 for 11. In this one as well. So just kind of some of these new faces in new places type thing to remind, I guess it's an old face and an old place for Odell Beckham Jr., but Isaiah Likely might get some interesting run there for the Giants as well. Cam Scataboo is back, 4 for 19 for him there in that one on the ground. Jameis Winston has now taken over. He's 8 of 9 for 89 yards. We started Kyler Murray, didn't play very much. 2 of 3 for 10 yards. We went to JJ McCarthy, 4 of 7 for 34. He's already out as well. We're now to Carson Wentz. So Carson Wentz is in the game for the Vikings. Currently 10-3. Nope. Field goal up and good here in the third. So 10-6 in favor of the Giants over the Vikings. These games went off. Bills at 2.5, 38.5 the total. Vikings at 1.5, 41.5 the total. And then the Browns at 2.5, 39.5 the total there. In that one, we were joined earlier on by Jake Crane. We were going through some college football, and this seemed one of the very very interesting off seasons when you get all this SEC talk, and it's really not centered around Alabama. And Alabama usually is at the center of every conversation whenever we're talking about not only what's going to go on in the SEC, but from the national title picture as well. And I was able to ask him about that. Well, we don't have that. All right, so never mind. We'll just move right on here. And instead of going to that, we'll just look at the rest of the Major League Baseball card, and of course, what's going on over there in the FedEx St. Jude. And Scottie Scheffler starts off as a mere mortal. Scottie Scheffler, through four holes, is one over. Victor Hovland, on the other hand, two under through five. And so he is sitting at 10 under. They are now tied atop the leaderboard. I was wondering if we would get a run from somebody. And the run is coming from, fortunately for me, a guy that I have an outright on in Sam Burns. Sam Burns is six under through 11. So Sam Burns opens with a 67, comes back with an even par 70 yesterday, is now six under through 11 holes, all of that being birdies, no eagles or anything like that. He also has a clean card as we sit right now, so no pars on his card either. I will say his drive on hole number 12 did go through the fairway into the fairway bunker, so he's going to be 131 out on 12 from a fairway bunker. But Sam Burns trying to make a run at his good friend, his best friend there, in Scottie Scheffler. He is currently at 9 under, so that's only one off now of the lead of Scheffler and Hovland. Siwoo Kim is 6 under through 16. He's sitting at 8. Sungjae Im's even par, but he's obviously still well within the range of making a run and getting up there. Kurt Kitayama, 5 under through 16. That puts him at 7. He's tied with Hideki and Tommy Fleetwood and Ludvig Åberg, who all still have plenty of holes to play and can certainly start to put some pressure on the top of the board as well. Tom Kim was on fire early and then faded just a little bit. And I say just a little bit. He finishes 7 under 63. That said, at one point, Tom Kim had birdied 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 10. Then he, a few pars in a row, gets to 15, birdies that as well. But then the bogey on 16 and a bogey on 18. Anyway, he finishes at 7 under. Still an unbelievably awesome round. But does find himself at 6 under for the tournament because he started so far back and obviously 4 off of the lead. As we sit right now, we'll see where the lead ends up by the end of the day. He'll have a lot to make up tomorrow in all this. Live odds, Scottie Scheffler still your favorite in that tournament. Victor Hovland now about 3.5 to 4 to 1. You can get Burns a little under 10 to 1, kind of in that 8.5 to 9 range, something like that. I think we do have the sound now from earlier whenever I was talking to Jay Crane on that Alabama season. If we look at Alabama, this might be the first year in quite some time that when people are sitting here and we're getting to close to football season and everyone wants to talk about real contender, that Alabama isn't kind of in that first conversation, right? It seems like they're kind of in that second conversation that you have. Is that fair? What do you think of this Alabama squad?
Well, I think it is. And I think some people, especially if you're not somebody that follows this, you know, through life and death, don't realize what Ty Simpson was able to do last year with no run game. I mean, we live in a world now where Alabama is mortal up front. And when I look at teams and I'm projecting and I'm sitting here saying, all right, I think this team's going to finish here, which is what we've done on Crane and Cone. We got a lot of predictions out there. We're going to have our conference championship winners, national title winners here this next week. But I look at the recipe and the ingredients. And I think when Nick Saban was at Alabama, yes, he monopolized the sport. But one of the most underrated things that he did was roster management. He would never lose too much at one time where you had kind of symbiotic positions having to rebuild. For example, offensive line and quarterback. If you're green there and you're new there and you've had problems in the past, if either one of those things don't work, you're not going to work. So I'm supposed to sit here and just say, you know what? Alabama, they weren't able to run the ball at all last year, but this year it's all going to be fixed. Oh, and that brand new quarterback that went off last year and Ty Simpson, oh, they can just roll another guy out there and he'll do the same thing. I don't see that happening. Now, we live in a crazy world right now. It could happen. Alabama could be amazing. The defense should be stellar. There's some questions about the front seven, but the secondary is basically Azkaban. You're not getting through there. But when I look at new quarterback, an offensive line that still has to prove it, I worry about that. Now, you look at Alabama's schedule, they're going to start 5-0, but the question in the season is going to be determined by that 6-9, week 6, really through 10, if you look at it, if Alabama's going to be 9-3, 10-2, or possibly even 8-4. But this is not old Alabama. You cannot dominate the sport the way that Nick Saban did and Kirby had started to do before it changed. I think they're mortal in some areas, and right now I do not have them in the college football playoff.
Does not have the Alabama Crimson Tide in the college football playoff. I'm sure that will make the people in Tuscaloosa feel really great about all that. But again, it is a team that has not been talked about kind of whenever we are getting it. We talked to a lot of people at this point at the network. Not a lot of people are talking about Alabama being a real contender for the national championship. We did get Shedeur Sanders into the game for the Cleveland Browns here in the second half. He starts out with actually Some big numbers here. 2 of 3 for 59. Bajent's day is done. We've gone to Case Keenum, who actually 2 of 2 for 60 and a touchdown over there. So now the Bears 17-10 over the Cleveland Browns. Still about 9.5 left there in the third quarter. Keep it right here. Joe Cirillo going to take over, take you through these afternoon slate in baseball. Of course, the rest of these preseason games as well. Brad Taylor and Will Hill go from there. And then close out the night with Doug Kazarian. Good luck on all your bets.